it's done.
Connor McDavid! It's not real!
The goal of the year?
Panarin!
Part of the past. The celebrations? Forgotten. The history?
Vegas Golden Knights!
History. We're back to a blank slate. Clean ice. All that matters now is what happens next. The Stanley Cup Playoffs.
Eastern Conference Final begins Wednesday.
Welcome back to another episode of the Hockey News on the A podcast. I'm Jacob Stahl from the Hockey News alongside Patrick Williams as always. And we're coming here with a little bit of an all-star game recap episode, if you will. A lot happened there. Pat was actually on the scene on the ground coming back from Montreal right now. I'm actually heading to Montreal in like 10 hours. So we missed each other there because Patrick's avoiding me. But Pat, how you doing?
Good. How are you?
Pretty good. So when did you get back from Montreal? Or Laval?
Like earlier today. So yeah, it was a hectic time, right? Like they packed a lot into that. It's about 48 hours or so, give or take. Yeah. There's obviously the skills competition. There's the All-Star game itself. There's the Hall of Fame ceremony. There's, you know, a lot of the sort of in between off ice stuff and, but a fantastic event. This was my 11th All-Star game.
Wow.
In the AHL and the best one yet. That's no disrespect to previous ones, but the entire setup, the way it was organized, having the Montreal Canadiens involved, the facility. I mean, for anyone who's ever been to Place Belle in Laval, I think you know exactly what I mean. And I've been there several times before for regular season games, but to see it kind of in the all-star mode, right?
Yeah.
The way the fans showed up, they packed the building each night, 10,000 plus, nationally broadcast across the U.S. and Canada. It was just really perfect. It certainly sets the bar high next season when it's in San Jose, back on the West Coast.
So quick question here. So the Hall of Fame ceremony was where? Like, where were those events during the day? Because I saw you had a thread about Scott Howe's State of the Union, the Hall of Fame induction ceremony, all that stuff. But when did that take place and where did it take place?
Yeah, so it was at a theater, probably maybe 15 minutes away. From what I understand, it was originally supposed to be at Place Belle, but there was some sort of conflict with the schedule. So it was kind of at a nice theater setup, not too far away. And you had five people inducted, including Dave Andrews, the longtime president CEO of the league. All the players actually make the trip as well. So they kind of get a little bit of an introduction to the history of the league and all the people that came before them and helped build this thing, which is 87 years old now. Kind of see the timeline, right? From when the league started and all those people that came before them to where it is today.
Totally. Yeah, it's funny. I mean, from seeing all the events and the like, kind of everything that was sort of happening, it seemed like a very jam-packed sort of event that you wouldn't maybe necessarily think in the AHL or whatnot, but it seemed to be really first class. Before we get to me picking your brain about more of that, I have to ask you what's been on my mind since, we got on here. Did you eat smoked meat?
Yeah, not this time. No, usually I
not the travesty, man.
It was, I know it was, is pretty busy event, right? Like, I was going pretty much start to finish, but,
were you in Laval or Montreal? You're
It was mostly all in, I was in Laval. I didn't even get down to Montreal.
Oh, okay. So you were fully,
I was in Syracuse the couple nights before. So, right. It was kind of a go, go, go. I mean, I wish I had more time, but just the way, the league likes to try to fit it in between, when the NHL comes off its all-star break and when things really get busy. So, they kind of have a little bit more of the stage to themselves. So it does by just nature have to be a little bit more compact. I did go to Cora's, which I'll tell you in Quebec is always better, for some reason. So it was good that way.
Can't go wrong with Cora's. Okay. Let's get to Scott Housen's State of the League or State of the Union, as you will. So, couple things I want to ask you about. First thing, did anything Scott Housen say surprise you?
Not really, no. And the takeaway I had was, and I mean this in the best way, was fairly non-eventful address, you know, like, and I mean that in a good way, because, you know, if there's one thing we've had in the last 3 years, it's way too much happening.
Right. Yeah. Yeah.
So to sort of downshift a little bit and just sort of have a little bit more of a status quo and things kind of slow and steady
right
at the moment, was actually a nice kind of pace. And, you know, and I, like I said, I've been to 11 of these already. And, you know, in past years, you know, especially when the whole West Coast movement was happening and then the subsequent fallout and just everything that would, you know, happen, every year it seemed like there were two or three, you know, major fires that were going on around the league, right? You know, either franchise stability or what have you. And this year it's just quiet, right? Like there's not a whole lot of issues on the horizon. Now it's more about we're at this level now as a league, if you're Strahd Allison, how do we take it to that next level, right? Like Dave Andrews left a really good foundation in place. Let's take it to the next step. That was sort of the
so what is the next step? Because I know they talk about how streaming and not cable TV, which I mean, I don't blame them, is the more preferred outlet for AHL games. So what is, or from what, whatever, whether it was what Scott said or what you think, what is that next step for the league as a whole?
Revenue enhancements. I think a big thing was getting some real good, strong corporate partnerships is a big thing. I mean, traditionally the league has had more business to business type sponsorships. He told me that they're really looking in that corporate direction. It's heated up in the last 6 months or so, talks with different companies and things of that nature. They've fought a lot of their big battles already, right? Like the schedule, the 72 game schedule, they got that in place for this year. They got the expanded playoff format last year, which was something the NHL general managers had really been pushing because they want their prospects to get that extra playoff time, right? You know, so those two battle, I don't know if you call them battles, but you know, there was certainly, you know, ground that had to be walked through, and they, you know, had to figure out some complications with that. They did that, right? You know, they came through the pandemic, it looks like, intact, right? You know, and that was one of the things I was thinking about, sitting there in that building that's sold out, you know, it's nationally broadcast, and you're thinking only 2 years ago this was a league that was playing basically a kind of a makeshift schedule in practice rinks with no fans, and really just playing just to get prospects some ice time, no playoffs to speak of, no, just not a typical season, right? And last year was a little bit off kilter, and this was an event that had been canceled or postponed twice already. Third time it happened was, you know, finally it came through this year, and mm-hmm. I think it just really spoke to how the league managed to really get through what could have been a catastrophic situation for them as a league. I mean, minor league hockey is not an easy business in the best of times, never mind when you throw a once in a 100-year pandemic at it. So the fact that the league came through it, I think, something they're really thrilled about.
So the AHL induction ceremony, from what I saw, I mean, just as someone that grew up a massive Manitoba Moose fan in the days when Nolan Baumgartner was in his prime, it was really cool to see him, you know, choke up a bit and be emotional, and especially the ode to Mike Keane, who I also grew up watching. So that was my personal kind of, it's a neat thing to see. And I remember a quote about how, I think you put it out there, I can't remember who said it, remind me, about how it wasn't in the minors, it was the American Hockey League.
Yes.
And was that Baumgartner?
That was Dave Andrews.
Dave Andrews, okay.
The quote was, we don't want to treat it as the minors. Like that's a phrase, the word minors is a phrase that kind of really gets people's back up in the American Hockey League. And, you know, just really in any minor league, it's not generally said in a positive sense, right?
Yeah.
And, Dave Andrews' approach to it, and this was echoed by like Baumgartner and Keith Acoin and some of the other figures there, that we want this to be the best American Hockey League it can be, right? Like the second best league in the world, top prospects, first round picks, second round picks. I mean, you name it. And the only league in the world where you have players on a night to night basis go back and forth to the NHL, right?
Good point.
you know.
Well, look at soccer in Europe. The tier two teams in, you know, a country or whatever are still treated like it's the hot part. Okay, that maybe is a bad analogy because a lot of these places, that's the only team there. Maybe that's apples and oranges. My point being, though, is other sports, soccer is the main one. Even the tier below feels like a professional atmosphere. I think that's what a lot of these AHL teams and organizations are trying to strive for. I just want to ask you a quick thing. So what do you think about the game itself? And for those that don't know, what was the format of it? It was like a three-on-three tourney kind of?
Yeah, three-on-three, very similar to the NHL setup. All four divisions had a team representing them, three-on-three. You know, obviously, you know, a lot of back-and-forth action. I thought it was fantastic. Players showed up, right? Like, they actually were competing, you know, and it wasn't just kind of, you know, like, go around and go on the ice and mess around. Like, you know, they were playing to win. You know, I'll point out too, right? Like, these players had some really difficult travel, some of them, right? Coming from the West Coast, the league played Saturday night. You know, those players had early wake up calls to get from the West Coast to Montreal by, you know, middle of Sunday. That night they were on the ice for the skills competition. The following day they had the Hall of Fame ceremony. They had, you know, some off ice promotional events to do. Monday night they played the you know, the actual game, and they were going hard, you know, like, and it was, I think, a real credit to them and to, I think, some of the veteran leaders too, who, you know, came out and played themselves. And it's one of those things, like, you don't want to be the guy going too hard in the All-Star game if no one else is, but when the kind of the top players set that tone, everybody else follows. And I think that's what you saw with that. It's an All-Star game, right? You know, it's not going to be, you know, like game seven of the, you know, the playoffs, but it was still fun entertainment. The crowd was really into it.
I was saying this to producer Connor before we got on, and let me start by saying I know this will never happen, but remember how the NHL used to have that, like, rookie classic where they had, like, the first and second years? Could you imagine if they had something similar in the AHL, how awesome it would be? And producer Connor made the point of, like, that is a bad idea because of the injury risk, and that is completely true. And these guys someone would probably get hurt, whatever. But it'd be so neat, like, kind of like CHL top prospect style, where you had, like, the best talent in the league playing. I think it'd be awesome. I think it's far-fetched, but yeah, I think that'd be so cool. Then again, though, I think that could take away from the All-Star event as a whole, and it seems like all went well. So,
is it far-fetched, though? I don't know. Like,
I think it is because of, like, the risk. Okay, if you did it where it was sort of after the year or something, maybe be different. But is it far-fetched? Maybe not far-fetched, but it's probably unlikely because of the injury risk.
If you could sort of put it in the context of a 3-on-3 or 4-on-4, so it's not quite a full-on, like, you know. But then, you don't understand. You don't want, you know, players out there, you know, diving in front of shots and, you know, and that sort of thing. But if you still had a showcase where they could, you know, display their skill, and, you know, and it was more of a competitive.
Yeah.
You say if it was somewhere between All-Star game level and regular season level.
Yeah. Like, see, spot. I gotta say, this is maybe why it wouldn't work is my idea. My idea is 5-on-5, balls to the wall. Like, I think that'd be like, you know, how the Senior Bowl in college football has that sort of thing where it's like top prospects, or I don't know about the best in college football, but some of the good ones are facing off, trying to raise their stock, whatever it may be. I know you're probably thinking this sounds like the CHL top prospects game, but no, because, like, I feel it'd be cool, especially with, like, the deadline coming up. You're looking at these top prospects, how they scale up. Can you imagine if there was this event around this time of year where you saw the top prospects playing against the other top prospects? I think it'd be so cool.
I think there's some merit to your idea. I mean,
are you about to drop a Bob McKenzie bomb? I feel like you know something.
No, I don't. I'm speaking only on my behalf. Just kind of you throwing this out at me, like, you know, right off the bat. And I like it. I mean, you know, I think anything where we can, as a sport, get a little bit creative, right?
And totally. Just
view things in a different light, right? Like, you know, this is a, you know, look how much change has happened. I mean, in the hockey world in 5 to 10 years, right? Like,
yeah.
You know, there was I'll tell you, you know, somebody that was around before that, you know, there was a long period where there wasn't a whole lot of innovation. There wasn't a whole lot of change, right? Like, and yeah, I've seen more of that in the last 5-10 years than I saw probably in the 20 years prior. So
I guess the point I'm trying to make is, could you, and I swear I'll move on after this, but what I'm trying to get at is, while there is an injury risk, I'm going to go back to my original point. Teams may get frustrated if an injury were to happen. But from a perspective of, okay, we have an asset. We want our asset to play to prove their worth or whatever. I know it's a gamble, but it's like, could you imagine you have a prospect going to this game, they light it up, and then more teams are calling you? And that's what I mean. It could be a situation where you're – it's no disrespect to the other AHL players that are great in the league. Don't get me wrong. But I think it'd be cool to kind of size them up against someone in their cohort to get a better idea of where they're at. I don't know. That was my little silly idea.
It's not silly. No, I think there's a lot of merit to it. And like you said, the CHL essentially does something like that. So
yeah, and actually, how many injuries are there in that? I'm going to look that up before next episode because maybe.
Yeah, I mean, you know, first of all, like, you know, there's injuries. Injuries are just a fact of life. And I mean, totally. And listen, you could be walking to the rink and you could slip on a patch of ice and fall and, you know, break your ankle too, right? Like, you know, life is not risk free, but, right. You know, it's sort of what do you see as the potential benefit to it?
Because playoffs has that risk, and playoffs is supposedly this big development opportunity. But what about this game where it could be, I don't know, hold it in January, February? I don't know.
Sure. Like, and you send, you send a player off to World Junior Championship or
right.
World Championship. Look at Chris Jeter last year, you know, he final play of the gold medal game for Canada. And,
yeah,
blew out his knee in his 9-month recovery time, or you send a player to Spengler Cup or whatever. I mean, practice is a risk. I mean, guys get injured in practice. I mean, so
you're right. I should stop listening to producer Connor. That's a good idea. But I will listen to him right now when we shift to our team of the week, and that is, shocker, surprise, surprise, the Montreal Canadiens.
Yes.
Only fitting. Let's stay in Quebec while we can, just like Pat's background on the screen. If you're listening, it probably makes no sense. Anyways, team of the week, Montreal Canadiens. Let's get to a couple guys that I want to highlight. Some are like currently with the Habs, but have spent a good chunk with Laval, and for all we know, are on their way back there anyways soon. So the first one, Justin Barron. Been with Montreal for the last little bit. He, you know, he was with Laval after, I think it's fair to say, he expected to make the main squad out of camp. He didn't do that. Sent back to Laval, has seemed to make quite a lot of progress in the AHL, but now, you know, sort of in that transition phase where he's trying to be an every night regular in the NHL and sort of make a difference there. So I'm just be curious because, you know, we're approaching the nearly year since he was acquired from Colorado. What do you think about Justin Barron, his game, where he's at, and just the asset worth there?
Well, number one, I think he got a really good foundation starting his career in Colorado. And I've said this before, I think, you know, either in the show or elsewhere, that just, he played for Ray Cronin there, the head coach of Colorado Eagles, who's extremely, extremely meticulous. And that's why I'm interested, like Ryan Merkley, for example, coming to Colorado. I'm interested to see what a guy like Cronin can do with Merkley, whose defensive game obviously is kind of been, you know, under construction. So Barron, you know, not that Barron had those issues, but, you know, just those little details that had to get tightened up, Cronin Jr., he did that. So when he came to Montreal on that deal last year at the deadline, there's already a good foundation in place. Sure, he didn't make the team out of camp. Sure, he was disappointed. Well, I mean, I know he was disappointed, but it does go to show you that if you don't make the team out of camp, so what, right? You go down to Laval, you play well, you play yourself out of the American Hockey League. Every single player that has come from the American Hockey League has done exactly that. 90% of the players in the NHL came that path and had to do that same exact thing, which was right. Play their way out, right? He did that. He went to Montreal. He's, I think, you know, held his own. Obviously, Montreal now is, you know, let's see where they're going in terms of the deadline. Obviously, it looks like they're not going to the playoffs, obviously. So I think that offers an opportunity for him to take even more ice time with the Habs, play down the stretch there. And let's see, I mean, who knows, maybe they can make him eligible for the Colorado Cup playoffs. If Laval,
right.
And then he can come down there with all the confidence he built up in this time with the Habs, come out down there and be dominant, which we've seen that has happened time and time again with players who have done that. So I like where he's at right now. I think they've managed him well. I think this now, this this last two and a half month stretch of the season, now you make that big push.
Yeah, I have a feeling whether it's the playoffs or sometime this year, we see Justin Barron back in Laval. The reason for that is I think if he was in any other organization, sorry, not any, let me clarify. Let's say he's back in Colorado, for instance. Mm-hmm. And this is all kind of hypothetical, but let's say he's back in Colorado. Would he really be disappointed if he was sent down from camp? Of course he's disappointed as a competitor, but there's not as much of an opening there.
Sure.
So it's kind of like circumstantial because with Montreal, there's not much there. There's a lot of room to kind of take a spot. So further to that point, I don't know if Barron's really there yet where he's an everyday player just yet. I think he's done a really good job in the AHL, but I think also there could be a time where we see him back in the A, whether it's the playoffs or not. Actually, just before, now that you say that, to make him eligible, though, they just have to paper him, right? Or is there anything else?
Yeah, via paper.
Okay, so yeah, right.
You know, you see it quite a bit, actually, you know, like,
of course.
Teams, you know, sometimes the most dangerous teams in the Calder Cup playoffs are the ones whose NHL parent teams don't make their playoffs.
100%.
And can send down, you send down two or three, you know, top tier players.
Like change that, the whole
right?
landscape.
You send down a goalie or, you know, whoever, right? I mean, we've seen that. I mean, I don't know how many times. So it's one of the biggest stories and themes in the Calder Cup playoffs every year is, you know, that's why it makes it such a hard playoff field to really pick because, you know, you can have a team that didn't look like a whole lot in the regular season. They get that influx of three players, impact players, and they're a different club.
Raphael Harvey-Pinard is another guy who's currently with the Habs. Awesome story. 6 points in seven games with the Habs. Such a late bloomer. Hometown Quebec guy. Really, really popped off last season with Laval Rocket. Really strong playoff as well. Just an awesome story, I think. And I want to preface this by saying I don't know exactly what his NHL role would be or his upside, whatever it may be. But this is a guy that, you know, last year, last season, for example, I wouldn't say he came out of nowhere, but this is a seventh round pick in 2019. Mm-hmm. Scores 56 points, 69 games. Gets a call up last year. Scores his first career goal, kind of after, you know, a pandemic rookie season that was good, but not great. So an awesome thing there. Why is it that Harvey Pinard's kind of climbed the ladder pretty rapidly here?
You know, he's a Swiss Army knife type player, right? Like you can use him, you know, kind of 1-4 lines, like, you know, inserting the AHL level. You know, he came in on an AHL deal. He got his opportunity during the shortened pandemic season, right?
Yeah.
You know, when the league was, you know, rosters were certainly in a state of flux. He came in and he just jumped on that opportunity. He earned himself a deal with the Habs after that season, right? And then followed it up last year, like you said, right? And against much better competition, I should add, too, right? So, like, he didn't just kind of plateau there, right? Like he's been getting steadily and steadily better, high character player, very coachable. And he just works every single night, right? Like not a big guy. Mm-hmm. You know, he's definitely on the smaller side, but he plays big, right? Like, you know, and I don't mean like, you know, fighting. I mean, just like, you know, he battles for pucks, he'll go into, you know, the corners, he'll go in the hard areas, right? Like, He's one of those players like that every good team, they have a couple guys like that, right? And he fits that bill. So, you know, I love his story. I mean, it's just an amazing story. A guy that, you know, had to really just, you know, he didn't get anything handed to him, right? You know, he had to play his overage year in the queue. That was coming off even a huge playoff that he had. You know, he captained back-to-back teams in the queue, and then just, you know, kind of really good, like I said, took that pandemic opportunity and made something of it. And he was strong in the playoffs last year for Laval and their run to the Eastern Final, and it's just not stopped, right? Like every year he gets a little bit better. And then you just keep waiting for him to kind of hit that ceiling, and he has yet to do it.
Well, let's go with Caden Primo. He was a stud for Laval in the playoffs last year, and he seemingly fallen off a cliff like from that point. You know, you would have thought, like, for example, we talked about Will Bitten last week or the week before as a guy that had a really strong Calder Cup playoff, and then he's carried that over to this year. When I watched Caden Primo last year, I thought that it'd be a similar situation, but that has not been the case whatsoever. He had like a 936, I believe, in the playoffs last year. Something crazy through 14 games. Now this year, in 18 regular season games, he's got an 895 save percentage. Now, save percentage can be a little bit misleading sometimes. I think circumstances are very important to note. But that's a big drop-off. What's going on with Primo?
So he got – he was part of that. So Laval was really, really bad the first 4 to 6 weeks of the season, right? You know, they, just when they sort of seemed like they were starting to turn their way out of it, he got injured. Missed almost 2 months. And, you know, because Kevin Poulin, the other goalie in Laval for most of this year, got hurt. He came back after a 2 month absence and had to play 3 games in 4 nights, right? You know, actually did pretty well, all things considered. But it's been a rough battle. There's no question for him. Coming off that that big playoff run where he was, you know, most nights really their best player. It was, you were looking for him to take that next big step, right? You know, that he doesn't make the Habs coming off, you know, training camp. You know, so I think there's, you know, a little bit of a letdown there. And then you come in and the team, you know, there was a lot of turnover in the summer. The team struggles. Then you get hurt. You miss 2 months. And now here we are. It's February. And yeah, your season's barely gotten off the ground. You know what, though? It's all water under the bridge. How do you play the last 2.5 months of the season, right? Like, Laval's going to be in a fight for a playoff spot this year. That North Division they're in is really kind of tight there, you know, even sort of toward the top other than Toronto, right? Like, nobody's really kind of completely taking charge there. Despite that bad start, Laval's in the race. I want to see him now do what he did last year in the playoffs, and that's put the team on his back and carry them, will them into a playoff spot. Because as we know in this league, once you get in the playoffs, anything happens, right? So, you know, it's a little bit of a different sort of challenge than carrying a team through the playoffs, you know, to do it now for an extended time in the stretch drive. I think this would be a great way for him to make something of this season so that you know, it just doesn't kind of turn out to be a lost cause.
All right. Last one here. Jesse Ylönen. What do you make of his kind of rise? So he also has had some games with the Habs this year, having a very strong season for Laval when he's been down there with 30 points in 36 games. He's actually had 10 games in NHL as well. What do you make of kind of his growth as well?
Yeah, Ylönen's, you know, he's it's been a slow climb, right? Like, you know, he came out of Finland. He had already played pro 2 years, actually a little bit more than 2 years.
2.5, basically.
Two and a half, let's say, before he came to Laval. Came in and kind of really made a quick impression last year, did well. This year's been solid. So I think it's been slow progression, but there has been progression. And I think that's the main thing, right? Like, that's where you would get concerned is if there wasn't continued improvement. Is it as fast as the Habs would like? Sure. I'm sure it's not, right? But I think he's trending in the right way. He's another probably be interested to see kind of where they go with him right down, you know, through February, March, April.
Good point.
How do they manage it, right? Do they
elevator it?
Is it a back and forth twice or three times a week situation on recalls? Do they, you know, kind of implant him there in the top nine with the Habs? Do they decide, all right, we're going to send you back to Laval and put you on the top line there and expect you to be the one of the guys? So it's, I don't have a great sense for how they plan to manage it. I think it really depends on kind of where the deadline goes and kind of where the rest of the Habs season goes. But I think for him, yeah, that will be an interesting case study just to see exactly how they want to take this, right? Like, but it is a little bit of a delicate point in a player's career. Once you get to that 23, 24 range,
absolutely.
You know, like, this is the time where,
well, you're not a prospect anymore. Like,
you're exactly like, so you're, you know, this is where you need to start to see that jump. Like,
absolutely. Yeah. And like, you can still make it, but you're not, like, you don't have kid gloves on you.
And this is where a lot of players can kind of get into, you know, a tough spot, right? Like if this year to 2 year period of their career, 23, 24, 25 range doesn't go the way they want it to go, that's when you start getting into, all right, this guy is no longer really a prospect. He's now just kind of an AHL player. And once you get that label is very difficult to shake off.
Let's move on to our prospect of the week. And I'm not trying to throw you a curveball, Pat. We discussed, we're going to go with Lucas Dostal. So we'll save him for another week. But I want to talk about the player that we want to speak about quite a bit this week. That's Dustin Wolf. So he's our prospect of the week. And it's sort of, there's a twist to our usual segment. I think he might be the first, second time nominee, I guess, for us. But here's the thing. Dustin Wolf is probably, well, I don't want to, sorry, still, but Pat, you seem to think Dustin Wolf is ready for the NHL.
Yes, I do.
Okay, so Calgary's team save percentage is at .892. That's 24th in the league. Markstrom has seemingly fallen off a cliff. Meanwhile, Wolf is dominating. So he's got a .928 save percentage this year. That's second amongst goalies that have played at least 15 games. Now, take this year and last year, combine them. So the last two seasons combined, he's posted a .926 save percentage through what is 81 combined regular season games. You've been covering this league for a longer time than I, but I would guess you rarely see players at 21 goalies, A, do this well, B, get recalled mid-year if they're even doing decently well. So my question for you, Pat, you kind of answered before, but A, is it time to give Wolf a look? And B, do you think they will? Like, do you expect to see him in an NHL uniform this year?
Probably not in terms of expecting him. But I do think he's ready, you know, and like, so I went to, you know, it's one of the things like with players, I always like to know what other players think of other players, right? And like, kind of like, who knows better than they do, right? Like, you're the one that's either facing that player every night, or in a goalie case, like, you're sitting there at the other end of the ice in the other crease, and you're watching this guy play, face 30 shots that night. And, you know, like, so like Calgary, San Diego are divisional rivals, and they see quite a lot of each other. So, you know, I went to Lucas Dostal, and, you know, I said, like, you know, what do you see in Dustin? Well, what's your scouting report on him? And the first thing is the athleticism, right? It's off the charts, you know, and like, it's kind of a Sergei Bobrovsky, like, you know, stature in terms of like, you know, he's wiry, he's tall. He's not going to certainly intimidate you, you know, size wise, you know, like some goalies can, but he's so fast, right? Like, and the other thing too is just like, he's composed.
Yeah.
It doesn't seem like anything rattles him. I mean, he was a seventh round pick, pick 214th in the draft. I believe it was only five players went after him in that 2019 draft.
That's insane.
If you've ever been at a draft, when you get down to pick 214, that is when they're like
cleaning up the hot dogs on the floor.
Yeah, there's the arena crew starting to like take down the tables, and you know, like the fans are milling, you know, out of the building, and you know, it's basically at that point friends and family. So here's a guy, that's when he's picked, but he, you know, it's an opportunity, it's a foot in the door. He came in. He had a fantastic CHL career, obviously, in the Western League. Came right in last year. Won goalie of the year, all-rookie team, first-team all-star. Took his team to the Western Conference final against the Chicago Wolves. And had they not – and that Wolves team was an absolute juggernaut. But, you know, had they run into anyone else, I think, that would have been a Calder Cup team that he was with in Stockton. Now, he carries it over this year in Calgary and is – better, and he's a workhorse too, right? Like, he's already played 34 games this year, you know, leads the lead in that category, you know, so you can give him a ton of work and he can handle it, right? And you know, I still think back to his first AHL game. It was in that pandemic year, and he got lit up his first game by the Toronto Marlies, and that was the Marlies team that, you know, was a little bit more experienced and skilled. You know, that was a season, like I said, where, you know, the talent disparity really did kind of changed considerably from one team to the next. He shook it off, right? Like, he came out that the following game, played well, had to go back to the Western League after that. And then just really, you know, he's just so composed. I mean, you forget, like, he's only in the second year sometimes, right? And like, just how level-headed he is. And, you know, so
let me ask you
I would love to see him called up. I think he's ready. But there is, as we know in hockey, right? Like that's a tough recall to make because, you know, you know how that the perception is, right? So like, what does this mean for Markstrom? Right.
Right.
So, yeah, I don't think that will happen, but then again, you never know. Like if a team gets in a desperate enough situation, you're starting to fight for, you're finding yourself in a fight for a playoff spot that maybe you didn't expect to have to be in. You might have to go that path. And if they did, I think you could be somebody that could handle that challenge.
And that's what I mean. Like that's where it comes down to, like how desperate is Tree Brad for living? How much does he want to make a change there? And that's what it'll come down to. But I want to ask you a question. When was the last time that you can remember a 22 and under kind of goalie or whatever being playing really good and then getting like called up not out of necessity but merit? Doesn't happen much.
No, you know, it's not exactly the same circumstances. I think Carey Price, though, when he came in 07 with Hamilton, coming out of the Western League at the end of his junior year.
Yeah, he was okay in the NHL, I think, too.
I still remember, he was absolutely dominant. He looked like he was a 10-year veteran. He came in and he jumped into a playoff situation too, right? So like this was kind of his introduction to the NHL. It was a playoff run for Hamilton. They ended up winning the cup that year. And, you know, so you're facing the best competition you're going to face anywhere outside of the NHL. Mm-hmm. He came in and it was like, you know, it's like he'd been doing it forever. And so it wasn't quite the same circumstance, but that's like, yeah, when I think back to a player that just right off the bat, just got it.
You're getting those vibes from him. You're getting Carey Price vibes from Dustin Wolf.
Yeah, I don't want to go. I don't want to go.
Patrick Williams said that Dustin Wolf is the next Carey Price.
No, I did not. I said
we're going to name the video that.
But, you know, in terms of a player that just came into the AHL and right off the bat figured it out fast, he does remind me of Price in that sense.
And that was like 15 years ago. And that's kind of the point I'm making is that you don't really. Like, there's been good goalies that are young. Like, do not get me wrong. But my point is sort of like what you're seeing here with Dustin Wolf, I think gives merit to the idea that either A, he's recalled, or B, he, at the very least, he could be. And then C, next year, he's going to be a Calgary Flame. And I think that's it's becoming very evident with regards to that. But for today's show, I think we're going to leave it there. Really jam-packed episode. Lots we kind of got in there. Want to squeeze it in. I'll let you guys know how I enjoyed Montreal next time. No, I'm kidding. But anyways, we'll be back next week. We'll have an interesting couple segments as always. But yeah, thanks for listening, guys. And nice to do this. Thanks, guys.